The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, How the Consequences of Defaulting on Student Loans Became So Harsh. This article was written by Jillian Berman on June 3rd, and there is a note. This op-ed explains the history of the student loan crisis in the U.S. By the time Patricia Gary contacted a lawyer to help her deal with her student loans, she'd paid $23,000 towards them and still owed $3,882. That was the case even though she only borrowed $6,000 in the first place. What prompted the call was a notice in 2019 that the government planned to take some of her Social Security check in order to repay the debt. Gary needed that money to afford food and medications, so she raced to figure out how to stop the feds from taking it. Gary first took on student loans in the 1980s to attend a for-profit beauty school. She left after about a year amid concerns she wasn't receiving a valuable education. The school later collapsed in scandal. Still, the debt Gary took on to attend followed her for years. She would periodically hear from debt collectors and make arrangements with them to throw some money at the loan each month. There were stretches where Gary didn't hear from anyone about her loan, and so she assumed she'd handled it. But somehow, it would always pop up again. In the meantime, she went back to school with help from her employer and later paid out of pocket to earn a master's degree. Those credentials helped her make a career of working with foster youth. So, how did someone who helped others escape their circumstances find herself at risk of struggling to afford basic needs because of her student loan? The answer I found in researching my book, Sunk Cost, Who's to Blame for the Nation's Broken Student Loan System and How to Fix It, is decades of rhetoric that fueled an image of student loan borrowers who didn't pay as people shirking their responsibilities. The result is that a program meant to help low- and middle-income Americans attend college features consequences for falling behind that are harsher in some cases than those credit card users face. Now those penalties are looming over borrowers as the Trump administration restarts student debt collection following a 5-year pandemic-era pause. About 5 million borrowers are at risk of having their Social Security checks and tax refunds taken, as well as their wages garnished over defaulting on student loans. But the march towards these punitive consequences began decades before the Trump administration. Over the years, lawmakers layered on policies that made it nearly impossible for borrowers to escape their student loans and delivered punishing penalties when they fell behind. This pattern started in the mid-1970s when Congress changed the way the bankruptcy court treats student loans. Probably one of the most well-known facts about student debt is that it's nearly impossible to discharge in bankruptcy. But that wasn't always the case. About 10 years after policymakers created the broad-based student loan program, newspapers across the country chronicled how seemingly easy it was for borrowers to get rid of their student debt. There were stories of graduates with professional degrees and from elite law schools discharging their loans through bankruptcy. One article in Pennsylvania newspaper, The Lancaster New Era, told the story of a woman in Ohio who got rid of her $4,100 in student debt by filing for bankruptcy. Ultimately, she found a job that would have paid her enough to repay the loan. A major source for that story was the executive director of a state-backed organization that worked for the government as a middleman in the student loan program. In other words, the organization had an interest in ensuring it would be difficult for borrowers to escape their loans. The head of the organization described to the newspaper what he called pre-planned bankruptcies. "They really make you sick," he said. According to the article, he worked with a congressman in his region to draft a bill that would ban borrowers from discharging loans in bankruptcy within 5 years of graduating. During congressional debate around this idea, it became clear that stories of widespread efforts from borrowers to get rid of their loans were just that, stories. For example, one congressman cited data indicating a 225% increase in student loan-related bankruptcies over 1 year in Pennsylvania. That really amounted to an uptick to 13 cases from 4. Despite this evidence, the proposal became law. Lawmakers ultimately expanded the provision to make it nearly impossible to discharge student debt throughout the lifetime of the loan. Roughly 2 decades after members of Congress first changed the treatment of student loans in bankruptcy, lawmakers quietly pushed through another change that would make it nearly impossible for borrowers to escape their student loans. For most consumer debt, there's a maximum amount of time a lender can sue to collect, called a statute of limitations. But in the early 1990s, lawmakers eliminated the statute of limitations on federal student loans. In other words, borrowers can be sued or face collections on the debt until they die. This decision was made without much fanfare. Lawmakers used a process that was meant for technical, non-substantive law changes to push it through. In their limited comments around the decision, members of Congress wrote that student loan borrowers shouldn't be able to escape their debt because their ability to repay the loan would theoretically increase over time. The wording echoed arguments in favor of making student loans more difficult to discharge in bankruptcy, portraying borrowers who weren't paying their student loans as people looking to escape their debt. That logic was part of what drove lawmakers to allow the government to take borrowers' Social Security benefits and tax refunds to repay defaulted student loans. In the mid-1990s, a bipartisan pair of lawmakers was looking to make it easier for the government to collect on debt of all kinds to help the federal budget. In defending the proposal, Carolyn Maloney, then a Democratic congresswoman representing New York, wrote in the New York Times that many delinquent debtors are able to pay, with little data to back up the assertion. Mainstream media outlets fueled that perception, sometimes calling those who owed the government money, including former college students, military veterans, and foreign governments, deadbeats. To address these concerns, lawmakers passed the Debt Collection Improvement Act in 1996, which, among other things, allowed the federal government to take a borrower's Social Security check and tax refund to repay a defaulted student loan. Years later, borrowers like Patricia Gary have coped with the fallout from decades of policies that assumed borrowers who didn't pay were doing it simply because they didn't want to. In my reporting on the student debt crisis for MarketWatch, I've spoken with borrowers who wrestled to navigate the student loan system and then had their earned income tax credit, a tax credit with bipartisan support that largely helps working parents, taken, making it more difficult for them to afford the basics, like shoes for their children. The data on borrowers who default indicates that most people who fall behind on their student loans are people like Gary or other borrowers I've encountered. They aren't paying because they don't have the money or are struggling to navigate the complexity of the student loan system, not because they're trying to shirk their debt. Borrowers in default are more likely to be unemployed and less likely to have finished school. Despite this, the government keeps using harsh consequences to essentially pull blood from a stone. That's because the groundwork has been laid for decades to prime policymakers and ordinary Americans to believe that borrowers defaulting on student loans are trying to outrun them, even though the data indicates otherwise. That begs a question Gary asked me about the efforts to collect her debt during the interviews we conducted for Sunk Cost. Does it ever stop? Or they just want to keep taking my money because they can do it? Our next article from TeenVogue.com. The Devil Wears Prada 2. Release date, cast, plot, and everything you need to know. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on May 29th. If, for some reason, you have been manifesting a Devil Wears Prada sequel since the original film premiered in 2006, your prayers have been answered. A sequel to the uber-popular fashion dramedy is in the works at Disney, and a lot of familiar faces are likely set to return. While most details are being kept under wraps, we have gotten some pretty juicy details about the Devil Wears Prada sequel. Keep reading for everything we know so far. Announcement. When was the Devil Wears Prada sequel announced? Though Disney has yet to make a formal announcement about the project, Puck was first to report on the Devil Wears Prada sequel on July 8, 2024. Puck reported that Aline Brosh McKenna, who penned the script for the original Devil Wears Prada movie, was in talks to return as screenwriter for the sequel, and sources close to Disney later confirmed the news via Deadline. Original director David Frankel is also expected to return for the sequel, as is producer Wendy Finerman, though Disney is yet to confirm their involvement publicly. Plot. What will The Devil Wears Prada sequel be about? The Devil Wears Prada sequel, or The Devil Wears Prada 2, if you will, is said to follow the stories of current-day Miranda Priestly, played in the original film by Meryl Streep, and Emily Charlton, Emily Blunt, who reconnect as Priestly navigates a rough patch in her glossy editing career due to the decline of traditional magazine publishing. Emily is said to be a high-powered executive for a luxury group with advertising dollars that Priestly desperately needs now. Devil Wears Prada 2 truthers have been long manifesting an adaptation of Lauren Weisberger's follow-up book, Revenge Wears Prada, The Devil Returns. The book, published in 2014, follows the story of Andy Sachs and Emily Charlton, running their own high-end bridal magazine, The Plunge, after exiting Runway. However, a lot of things have changed in media since 2014. Cast. Who is in the cast of Devil Wears Prada 2? According to a roll call from the industry site Production List, the cast includes Emily Blunt, Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep, and Stanley Tucci, But it's worth noting that no casting announcements have yet been made public for The Devil Wears Prada 2. Given that the story centers on Miranda Priestly and Emily, most assumed Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt would reprise their roles when the project was first announced. There's no official word on how Andrea, Andy Sachs, Anne Hathaway's titular role from the original movie could fit into the sequel. Release date. When is The Devil Wears Prada 2 coming out? The Devil Wears Prada sequel is confirmed to release on May 1st, 2026 in theaters. Earlier this year, Anne Hathaway opened up about the possibility of a Devil Wears Prada sequel while promoting The Idea of You, and she said it was probably not happening. There's a huge difference in the world now with technology, and one of the things about that particular story is it was about producing a physical object. Now, with so much being digital, it would just be very different, Anne Hathaway claimed at the time. Though the potential new plot seems to have that covered. Emily Blunt also said that sometimes things should be cherished and preserved in this bubble, and it's okay. Hinting that a sequel would not be a good idea, though she had previously said she'd be down to make it happen if everyone did it, but also had some reservations, claiming that sometimes when you sequel everything, it kind of dilutes how special the original is. That said, Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep, and Emily Blunt did have a Devil Wears Prada reunion during the SAG Awards 2024, so maybe that little meeting changed their minds. And there is a note. This story will continue to be updated as news about The Devil Wears Prada sequel breaks. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Coco Gauff manifested French Open win with a handwritten note. This article was written by Ashley Carter on June 8th. Coco Gauff made history this weekend after she secured the French Open title, the first American to do so in a decade. And while her hard work and dedication to the sport are evident in her success, Gauff shared that she had her own manifestation techniques to help motivate her along the way. The 21-year-old professional tennis player and former Teen Vogue cover star took home her first French Open title on Saturday, June 7th, winning in a dramatic Grand Slam final against Belarusian player Aryna Sabalenka. Gauff is the first American since Serena Williams to win the title. Gauff shared her gratitude and excitement on Instagram later that day, posting multiple slides to her story along with a grid post to celebrate the impressive achievement. She also shared her secret manifestation technique she used as a way to help turn the tide for herself, or just as a promise to win it all. In a photo shared directly from the French Open court at Stade Roland Garros in Paris, Gauff is shown holding a piece of unfolded paper that reads, "I will win French Open 2025, over and over again." Gauff captioned the photo, "Ignore my handwriting, but I saw Gabby Thomas do this, had to do the same, LOL." Thomas is an Olympic track and field star who has 5 medals and wrote down that she would be a gold medalist while competing in the 2024 Paris Olympics. Thomas said it was a way for her to build confidence in that moment and imagining myself winning and crossing the line in front. Thomas's strategy worked out for her as she took home 3 gold medals and apparently inspired Gauff to try the same thing. The tennis pro also shared a screenshot from her notes app from April, in which she shared how she was feeling anxious about practice, but tried to Visualize details of me winning the French Open. Following her win, Coco Gauff shared a heartfelt message on Instagram, "Waking up and starting to realize it was indeed not a dream," she wrote. "Losing in the finals here 3 years ago had created a lot of doubt in my head. I thought I could never overcome the pressure. I thought holding this trophy would never happen," she continued. The younger Coco would have looked at me crazy because that girl never doubted a thing in her life, especially when it came to tennis. But needless to say, I learned having doubt enter your head is impossible to escape, but not impossible to overcome. Yesterday was a result of that. I overcame. And if I can, so can you. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Miley Cyrus graciously handles audience hecklers at Tribeca Film Festival premiere. This article was written by Ashley Carter on June 7th. Miley Cyrus shared nothing but appreciation for her fans while premiering her visual album on Friday night, despite a few disruptive fans who demanded she perform for them. The musician debuted her 55-minute visual album, Something Beautiful, on June 6th at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York City. The film dramatically showcases the 13 songs from her 9th studio album of the same name, which was released on May 30th, much like other artists have done, including Beyoncé's Lemonade visual album. But as Cyrus took the stage at the Beacon Theater, after being escorted in by boyfriend Max Morando, alongside the movie's producer Panos Cosmatos, for a special sit-down chat about her new film, some fans were less than happy that the event was not a performance. In videos of the event shared on social media, a fan can be heard interrupting the conversation and yelling, "Are you actually going to sing?" Cyrus's mouth drops open, and the crowd reacts with a nervous-sounding laugh and shock. The person then shouted, "We thought this was a concert. We paid $800. The event's official page did not advertise Cyrus's appearance after the premiere as a concert. Instead, listed it as an exclusive conversation with Miley Cyrus. Despite the heckling, Cyrus kept her cool. The fan then demanded she sing The Climb, which she happily obliged for a few chords as the crowd sang along. Cyrus even shared her gratitude later on social media, writing in one caption on Instagram that seeing the film on the big screen, surrounded by the screams of the audience, was so worth every bit of effort lovingly labored into this visual album. She continued, "Tonight was emotional, deep, fun, and fabulous. All my favorite things. But you, the crowd, were my absolute favorite of all. I love you." Fans flooded the comments condemning the hecklers and sharing their support of the artist. "The people screaming at you to sing like it was a concert should have been kicked out," one fan wrote. "Miley Cyrus, your true fans will never be rude to you," another commented. Another person who claimed they attended the event called it the most aggravating 2 hours of my life and said that the crowd was demanding her to sing, walking in and out during the entire show, standing in the middle of the aisle videoing so no one else can see. Cyrus is taking it all in stride and focusing on the positive and only reacted to the Something Beautiful premiere instead of the fans. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Addison Rae became a full-blown pop star at the Box in New York City. This article was written by P. Claire Dodson on June 6th. Last night, At the iconic New York City burlesque club, The Box, Addison Rae became a full-blown pop star. She emerged on stage at the Spotify-hosted party-slash-performance of her new album, Addison, on a vertical bed under shimmering sheets. A gay person in front of me murmured to a friend, "Have you ever seen Hairspray?" More likely, it was a callback to Britney Spears on her 1999 Rolling Stone cover. Rae sang the first verse of Fame is a Gun under the covers, ending on the ill-fated declaration, "I always wanted more." The covers are stripped away, and she's revealed to be handcuffed to the bed in her underwear, a silk bra and panties set from Intimissimi, to be exact, leaving us in the front row seat as she goes down in history. "Nothing makes me feel as good as being loved by you," she admits, or admonishes, or openly mocks. On June 6th, Rae took the stage to perform songs from her new album for the first time. The seven-song set included Fame is a Gun, High Fashion, Aquamarine, New York, Headphones On, Diet Pepsi, and Times Like These. Amid outfit changes and simple props, the bed turned into a mirrored surface, a la Two Stars from Camp Rock, Rae was giddy energy and sensual movement and commanding stage presence. I thought back to her surprise appearance on the Sweat Tour last September, when Rae joined Charlie XCX and Troy Sivan to perform Diet Pepsi for the first time. In her white tulle tutu and bra top, with the approval and encouragement of Charlie and the breathily euphoric Diet Pepsi in her catalog, the signs of forthcoming pop stardom were all there. But the Spotify performance crystallized it. The screaming crowd, the dancers in cutoffs and lingerie, the celebrities in the wings, Julia Fox, Lola Tung, Amelia Gray, Claro, Jade, Conan Gray, the media clamoring for a look over the packed balcony. The deliciously sweaty atmosphere of naughty pop music, of witnessing a star come into her power on stage for the first time. Addison, fully in her body, digging her hips into the beat like she owned it, grinning and winking all the while. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.